thanks for joining us on this wonderful day. I'm happy to see everyone in the room that we have in the room. I'm assuming that a few people will join us as we go on. So I want to become a little bit familiar, and I'm now actually, I've got two computers going here just to let you know. So I'm going to show my computer screen so you should all see the presentation of PowerPoint becoming available to you. And I now see that that is the case, which is great. So I want to welcome everyone to our webinar on parenting today and how to work with the school system. I have background history. I am the product manager for the Classmate Reader, and this is an assistive technology handheld device that helps individuals receive content through from audiobooks or textbooks. And so what happens is we wanted to share this information because assistive technology is one of the pieces and answers to individuals that struggle with learning, and we wanted to make sure that we're providing you with some extra information. So the Classmate Reader is actually designed for individuals with print disabilities. It is a portable unit, and we have built-in study features. And as a parent, as I went through, I have been diagnosed with a learning disability in grade one. And as I went through life, I have started and continue to use assistive technologies to compensate for my weaknesses. And that's what it is designed for. This particular device is able to handle a lot of different file formats, and then you can take it with you wherever you go to receive information. And we will go into more details here in a little bit on that. So that's the Classmate Reader. I wanted to let you know that HumanWare creates supportive tools for individuals that are blind, low vision, or have a learning disability. And these are a few of our players that are actually digital talking book players. We also have a player that's designed for individuals that are blind, and they will use their little braille cells that they can feel. And technology now allows those cells to change, and it's electronic text to them. And so these devices allow us to receive information in alternative formats. So I wanted to give you that background. And I now wanted to introduce our guest speaker, and this person is close to my heart and a mentor in many ways in the ways to interact with individuals and educators and the value and importance of what this is, and I'm introducing Mary McBride. She is a mother of four children. She has a sister. She's worked in the school system. She's volunteered to actually at Learning Disabilities Associations nationally, provincially, and locally in the past. She's a daughter. She's an aunt. She's a farmer. There's many hats that she wears. And with that, she is going to tell us a little bit more about herself and then get into the presentation. So thank you for your attendance today. Please feel free to answer questions. We've got lots of things to cover, and we hope that this information is useful to you. So thanks. Over to you, Marion.
Hello, everyone. This is my first experience doing a webinar, so I'm pretty excited about that. Brenda's been doing these for a while on different things with HumanWare, so it's with great pleasure that I am joining her today. Brenda mentioned a little bit about me. I come from a family of four children, and I have a family of four children. Background of LD goes back a long ways. My siblings, two of them have a learning disability. Back in about 1958-59, my mother was buying the book Why Johnny Can't Read. And I remember that at the time, thinking back, because my brother was really struggling at the time. Lo and behold, when I had my own children, I started tumbling across some issues with learning as well, and discovered that their learning disabilities follow a genetic tree often, and some of my children have been blessed with learning disabilities as well, including, in particular, Brenda, who I was working with at the age of five when I didn't send my kids to kindergarten, and I was working at home with her and determined determined that there was definitely some different issues with learning that she was having that her older brother had at the time. I subsequently, prior to that, I had married someone who also has a learning disability, so it's kind of right all through our families, and we've been dealing with it for some time. At the time that I started becoming aware, I started doing a lot of reading. I went to the library and I picked up books on learning disabilities and on learning issues, and I started to educate myself about what learning disabilities were. I have the screen is going to show you typically what a definition in Canada at this time is. Somebody with a learning disability has average to above average intelligence. They have a pattern of uneven abilities. In other words, they're usually good in some things and not so good in other things. They have a processing problem that's presumed to be due to central nervous system dysfunction. That's in taking in, sorting, and retrieving information. It's manifested by significant difficulties in the acquisition and use of, and generally these kinds of things are what is going to show up, either listening, speaking, reading, writing, reasoning, mathematics, social skills, and time management. And typically people with a learning disability don't suffer from all of those, but they may be a cluster or a number of the different disabilities impacting these particular things. Our next slide is just going to show that it's a processing problem. We take information in, that's our input, we process it, we take it in basically from hearing, sight, touch, taste, and smell. It goes into our brain, we process it, and then we have output, and that comes out in the terms of writing, speaking, and action. That's pretty basic what happens. Unfortunately, it seems with a learning disability, sometimes information gets lost in that processing piece somewhere between input and output. Their learning disabilities are often called hidden disabilities, the invisible disability, because the individual looks and they act normal. They are often misunderstood by parents, teachers, and leaders. Often people with learning disabilities either act out or are interpreted as being disengaged or are thought of as being lazy. That's not necessarily the case, and in most cases it isn't the case. It's just that's how it manifests. Learning disabilities are related to the way people deal with information. When we say a neurological dysfunction, it's not something that can be medically fixed. It's something that's usually genetically predetermined, or there's something that's happened early in the child's life. Some of those things are the bottom point that you're seeing, their performance on tasks affected by learning disability tends to be well below average, and that's there's another slide coming up that'll kind of demonstrate that, and I'll have Brenda just move to that. Before we do that, though, at the very bottom, if you would like to refer to definitions either in the U.S. or in Canada, the two websites listed there are, and you can go back and find this again on the recording later, but those two websites will give the legal definition of learning disability in Canada and the U.S. Interestingly enough, it seems that various people have different ways identifying or defining or labeling learning disability. A learning disability is not an intellectual disability. It's not the slow learner. It's not the result of a poor academic background, an emotional disturbance, a lack of motivation or trying. It's not a visual or an auditory dysfunction, and it's not a physical handicap. It's rather, it's not a homogeneous group of disorders. Everyone is different. In other words, not all people with learning disabilities are going to present with the same issues at all. So graph that you're seeing in front of you now is kind of, if you were to have a test showing where you kind of test everybody's IQ and their processing abilities and so on. The slow learner has generally, and this would be an intellectual disability, they have generally a flat profile where everything is a little bit low. And if you have an average learner, they've got everything that's pretty much a little bit high and kind of in the same range. And a person with a learning disability has a smattering of really high and really low, typically. It's the low ones, the low scores that kind of perplex us because we're not sure why those particular skills are lacking. There's a word there called advocacy, and when I started this whole search for information when I was dealing with my family, I came across lots of terminology, and you may have heard some terminology already that is puzzling, and if you have questions about that and would like to write them to us, that would be fine. Advocacy is where you're the person who steps in and asks for the things that need to be in place. You're advocating for or speaking for a particular need. If we don't have advocacy and we just kind of let things stay as they are, you end up with a frustrated individual who suffers generally a loss of self-esteem, often is rejected by peers. They sometimes have learned helplessness where it's easier to say I won't than I can't. They have an inability to accept success. Oftentimes with somebody with a learning disability, they can perform one day and the next day it's not there. And when it does happen, they're very quick to attribute the successes as well as the failures to something else, to blame something else, but never to take credit for it. And there tends to be a loss of motivation. Why try if things are so difficult? So it really is important because these young people in particular are intelligent, they can tell that they're getting the same information, that they're not getting it. And so they're much more inclined to suffer poor self-esteem and understand what's going on and label themselves incorrectly if that's not, if it's not intervened with. So it's really important to step in and do what we can as parents. The challenges that comes as a result of having a learning disability are problems with decoding. In other words, that's being able to look at a word and determine what the word is. Often people can do things, but they process information very slowly because the connections in their brain aren't so, they don't work smack on, and so they've got to go around corners, and it takes a longer time to process information to retrieve the things that they need. They may have problems in comprehension, so they may be able to decode fine, but being able to understand what it is they're reading and comprehend it will be the issue. Encoding may be an issue as well. Organizing your thoughts. Sometimes learning disabilities comes with a second whammy, and that's attention issues. And for those people in particular, impulsivity and distractibility get in the way of organization. So organizing our homework, organizing our bedrooms, organizing what to do when or time is often an issue. Being able to pay attention and stay focused, because it takes a lot of work for someone who is being bombarded by internal distractions and the discomfort and the stress that they're experiencing. It's kind of that whole issue when it's your turn to read and everybody's, you know, it's going down the row and you're supposed to be reading for understanding and comprehension of what's going on. And if you're so frustrated and stressed by the fact that it's going to be your turn in four times and you're trying to anticipate what part you're going to have to read, you're not paying any attention to the story at all, and you're focused totally on what am I going to say when I get to my turn, and maybe I can say I have to go to the bathroom and not have to read. So, I mean, there's there's all kinds of reasons why paying attention it becomes difficult. Completing assignments becomes also an issue because it's hard work, and there's a lot more when you have slow processing happening, for instance, and slow recall or decoding issues. It's not necessarily even the particular assignments the issue. It's being able to understand what the assignment is. So there's all kinds of kind of overlays with that. I'll just mention that, you know, I was a stay-at-home mom for 19 years with my kids, and I did a lot of volunteering at that time and became a lot more familiar with learning disabilities and the support that the organization could give me. And then subsequent to that, I went into the school system to work as a teacher assistant. So I worked in the school system for the past 20 years as a teacher assistant, working with students with learning disabilities as well as attention issues and some other Asperger's syndrome, stress issues, and so on. So it's kind of carried on into a professional career for me in addition to my personal life. Assistance, and that's assistance at home. It starts at home most of the time and then on into school, can give children independence, and that's our goal as parents. Our whole goal is to be not needed. It's to allow our children to be independent and not codependent and not enabled. So it can also save time. And if you can teach the child to do it and not have to do it for them forever, it is a longer process, albeit I understand that totally, but in the long term, it's going to save time. It'll develop confidence and risk-taking. That risk-taking flows into all other aspects of their life. It will improve self-esteem, and it will enhance their relationships, their confidence, and their ability to relate to other people is really improved. Improves reading and word attack skills. The more we do something, the better that's going to be. So ignoring the fact that there's an issue there really doesn't help that at all. And I'm all for working on the strengths and emphasizing those, but we also can't ignore those areas that are going to be needed the rest of our lives. Assistance can also encourage learning, making it easier for people to read for enjoyment. And I know, depending on where you are with your child, I didn't think we'd ever get to the point where Brenda was reading for enjoyment, but I have to say, I know that she probably reads more than I do at this time, even if she's doing it largely through audiobooks. It will also improve the academic achievement of your child. That whatever assistance they get is going to pay off in dividends on the report card. Brenda's just coaching me here about other things that I might want to talk about. I guess becoming involved with the Learning Disability Association that I became aware of when she was in early elementary school, every so often I would call up. I was afraid to go to one of the meetings to start with, so I would call up one of the people that I knew was on the executive, and I would pick their brain for what I needed to do next. And then eventually I started going to general meetings. And from there that progressed so that eventually I became on, I went on to the executive and started working with the association because it seemed that there was a lot of inside information that happened in the inner circle that wasn't necessarily getting just by attending meetings. So I determined that Brenda needed to be tested, to have an assessment done to find out what exactly we were talking about. So prior to doing that, I had read enough to know that I needed to go and make sure that she wasn't having a hearing problem. For instance, she wasn't not hearing what was being taught. So we did a hearing assessment. Then I had her do a vision assessment. We even tried out a pair of practice glasses. That wasn't it. We tried to see if there was a lot of allergies and all of those things. And we eventually got to the point of realizing, no, we're talking about a learning disability, and had a psychoeducational assessment done. You have to typically request that, and especially when your child is young. But I just knew that there were some frustration and anger happening that shouldn't be happening to a six-year-old. So we went about working with the school system at that point and requesting testing and saying, I want to have her assessed, and I want to know what there is out there for somebody who's struggling to learn to read when everybody else is finding it easy. And I knew it wasn't for lack of trying, and it wasn't for lack of support and all of those things. And we even looked into the Feingold diet at that time and to see if there was some issues with diet. I do believe there is some issues with many children with diet, especially for hyperactivity and that kind of thing, but that wasn't our particular issue at the time. I attended a conference about that time, and Richard Lavoie, Dr. Richard Lavoie, was guest speaker. It was a long time ago, and I can remember distinctly him talking about fairness at the time, because we always have that feeling that, well, is it fair to ask for something for our child that everybody else isn't getting? Is it fair? And fairness doesn't mean that every person gets the same treatment, but that every person gets what he or she needs. So Dr. Lavoie at the time said, if there's somebody in the front row out here and they keel over because they need a mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and some oxygen, does that mean that everybody else in the room has to get the oxygen as well? It kind of, you take it even one step further, if I don't need glasses and somebody else does, is it fair that they get glasses and if I don't get glasses? So because we have an invisible disability here, we tend to forget that fairness isn't treating everybody the same. I, at that time, also through the Learning Disability Association, became aware of the grieving process. And I didn't think it applied to me until I thought about it very seriously then after that, and I found it very encouraging to know that this is normal. We start out our married life and have our children thinking that they're going to be artsy and intelligent, and they're going to be athletic and good looking and a social butterfly and all of those things. And it's like we've got this trip planned and we're going to the Mediterranean and we're going to sit in the sun and look at statues and so on. And that's kind of the life plan that we have set out. And then we find out that we are going on a trip, but our trip actually has taken a detour and the plane's actually dumping us off in Iceland. Excuse me. It's still a trip, and it's going to be wonderful because you might actually get to see icebergs and whales and seals and different things there, but it's not the trip that we planned on. So just like when we lose somebody near and dear to us, we also grieve when we lose our dream or our vision of what we thought our children were going to be. And so you go through that process that's very typical, and two parents in a marriage often go through these stages at different times and may not even realize they're going through it. But when we find out that there's the big word disability there, especially when we don't understand, that means, in this case, average to above average intelligence, we automatically jump to the worst conclusions. And so, first of all, we deny that there's anything wrong. Oh, he's just like his father was, or he's just like I was when I was younger, or he'll grow out of it. There isn't an issue here. So we deny, deny, deny. And then we go through stages where we blame. We blame somebody else. We blame the teacher in grade one. We blame the fact that grandma spoiled them. We blame We blame ourselves. We blame our partner. We blame the child for not paying attention. It goes on and on. Then there's guilt. Then we start looking back. Well, what did I do when I was pregnant? Maybe I shouldn't have gone out that other night. I should help with her homework. I was guilty because I left them and I went on holidays. We do all these things until we understand that this is a genetic condition that you had little to no control over at all. And so there's a guilt stage. We also are just plain angry. Why did this happen to me? We question and we're upset. And then we go through bargaining. Well, if I just get him the best tutor, if I just make sure that she gets to bed early every night, it'll all go away. And we also then justify. Well, we all know what justification is all about. So we go through stages like that. And then eventually we get to the point of accepting the fact that what we have to deal with, and that is a learning disability, and or whatever disability it is. And then eventually we move on to helping others. And some people never kind of get to accepting and moving on. Some people get stuck in various stages, or one of the two people in a family get stuck in one of those two stages. So it's just normal process that one goes through. And when you think that you've gotten past blaming or feeling guilty or being angry, and then it all comes back again when another incident comes along, this too is normal and this too shall pass. Just want to move on to our next slide, and that is realizing that this is a team effort and who's on the team. I tell my students at school that, you know, it's like a train going down the track. It's got a goal at the end of it, a destination, and the student is the head of the train. If you need to involve them in the process, you can't do it to a student. You need to do it with a student, and they need to be involved in the process. To that effect, you need to inform the student about who and what it is that they are to the ability that they're able to understand. So in our case, as Brenda was little, we started educating her. As she got to the point of understanding more, she did a little bit of research on her own. She made speeches up about learning disabilities. She did reports on learning disabilities when there was options to do that, because it gave her opportunity to understand herself and what was going on. The parents, and this is also siblings, you need to inform other siblings in the family about what's going on and why you're having to spend twice as much time doing homework with your child that is struggling compared with somebody else. And they need to understand that if it was them, you'd be doing it with them, that it's not that they're particular or special, it's just that that's what their need is. And we go back to that whole fairness thing. But if you don't talk about it with the children in the family, or your parents, the grandparents involved, so that they understand what's going on, then you make it much more difficult. Parents are part of the team. Teachers are part of the team, but they need to know that there's a team also, and that it's not just them. The administration and the principal, a consultant, an educational psychologist, a learning assistant teacher, or other support staff, sometimes a social worker, a speech pathologist. All of these people are part of the team, and it's advantageous depending on how well things are going, to have or to call team meetings where you all get together and kind of talk out the plan, because a team has a plan. It has a goal. We should not and best not be doing it in isolation. To the degree that you can involve everybody, it's going to work better. Is there a process to follow? I mentioned already checking for physical causes of the problem, and then communication starts. So you communicate with the teacher first of all, and then it may be their job to call in the experts. It may be your own job to look for some expertise. and get a proper assessment going. Contact support networks in your area that may be the Learning Disability Association. There may be some literacy associations around, and there will definitely be other people in the area. I didn't mention that 10% of the population is thought to have a learning disability, and it's probably higher than that because there's various degrees of learning disability. So it's not something we outgrow. It's not something we medicate away. It's just that when you're 75 and have a learning disability, it manifests itself a little differently than when you're 5, and you will have learned some coping strategies. It may be that in your even in your marriage, there's one person who takes the telephone messages because the other person in the marriage doesn't do that so good. We just learned the kinds of things that we need to do, and we've picked careers that work well with our disability, so it doesn't go away. So you need to start the communication with the teacher, and I suggest doing that first thing in the fall. When you're going into the school system, you meet with the teacher one-on-one. I don't wait for the parent-teacher interview times. That's a little late in my mind to get started. You need to let the teacher know that you're on side and that you're going to do what you need to do at home to support them and what they're doing. That's usually going to mean a little more communication back and forth, either through a communication book, but even better with a telephone call once in a while, or a private note. Communication books, I don't agree with all of the bad things being written in communication books that go back and forth to school and that anybody can tumble across. It's like, why would you want all of your faults and your downfalls and everything exposed on a piece of paper that you carry back and forth with you for anybody to come across? It's amazing how those kinds of communication books get lost in the bottom of lockers or fall into the creek on the way home. I prefer now, with technology the way it is, for email communication between teacher and parent, telephone calls, or in-person meetings. Involve the experts. That would be a psychoeducational assessment and analysis, and then the counselor at the school, perhaps, if you have one. Contact your support networks, the Learning Disability Association, to see what's typical in your area. And one of the reasons you want to have this label, I'm saying label at this point, and people shudder at the idea, but there is advantages to having the label, having a learning disability, and that is programming is only targeted for people who have a label. Only those people who have the label can access particular funding. I think that the label doesn't have to be limiting. I think it needs to be understood that labeling can actually be quite to the contrary, something that gives people freedom and understanding so that they can be successful. Consume education on the subject yourself. Go to conferences. Speak to the authorities in your area. Talk to other parents. Read yourself, go on the internet, see what you can find out. And when I started this game plan, there wasn't much in the way of technology, and there was very little in the way of understanding, more understanding than there was anything to help you out. You need to understand that most teachers take one class in any kind of exceptionality going through university to be a teacher. So unless they've taken extra education on your particular disability, they may or may not be the authority on it. It behooves you to become the authority yourself. Those people change every year. You're the one constant that's going to be there throughout the child's life. Try to be consistent. Children with learning disabilities thrive on consistency and on structure. Knowing what's coming ahead relieves stress immeasurably. Knowing that you've got things set up in place is going to make a big difference for them. Compare how you're doing this year compared to last year. Have you done all the things? Do a perception check to see where things are going. And keep in touch with the school so that you don't end up with the big gap happening, and it's just the fact that nobody thought to really check in to see where everybody was at. And having worked in the school system, many teachers have the best of intentions, but they really do rely on the student to communicate with the parent, and that always doesn't work very well with somebody with a learning disability. And often the parent doesn't know what to do, and so needs to become a real good advocate. So we've got a problem. You've understood there's a learning disability. Whose problem is it? Well, it's certainly not the school system's problem. You're the, once again, the constant that's going to be there. Are there some unexplored issues? Is it where they're sitting in the class that's causing part of the problem? Is it some of their social peer pressure? Are they in that situation where it's not popular to do well, so they're sabotaging their success? So if it's our problem, then let's figure out what to do about it. Should there be some mentoring? And we talked a little bit about that. That's talking to other parents and people who have been there. What about all that alternative advice? Well, you're probably going to come across, if they take vitamin such and such, if they take this whatever, and I'm not saying those things aren't good for them and won't help. It's just that they aren't going to be the panacea that somebody might think they are. So check them out. Some things are going to help them be more attentive. A good night's sleep does that, and a nutritious breakfast in the first place does that as well. There's some common sense kind of things that work in that whole point. How are the home team handling this? And I referred a little bit to that. Siblings and parents who, you know, if you're the parent that's done the reading, you need to share that with the other parents, the other people involved, the other adults in the situation. And zero in on what is the most important thing you can do at any given time. Sometimes it's not the homework. Sometimes it's going for an ice cream cone together and being the parent and not the teacher. I do know that being the parent of a child with a learning disability whom you want to be successful academically will take some homework. It will take some work, but if you can't work because of a personality conflict with your child, find somebody who can. There will be somebody out there, a retired teacher, a relative, somebody who will put the time in to do the coaching and working with the child that you may not be able to, and it's much better to salvage your relationship with your child and get somebody else to do the hard stuff if that is where you're at. So you have to know yourself. Brenda wants to say something here.
I just wanted to, someone who's joined us mentioned Fat City, and Fat City is something that I believe that parents and professionals actually can do a review every single year of that information. I'm just going to mute the other mic. And Fat City actually takes you through what it's like to have a learning disability. It's important to actually put yourself in the seat of someone that is experiencing this so that we understand the behaviors and the anxieties. So Fat City stands for frustration, anxiety, and tension. And this video has been around for, I do believe, 20 plus years now, and is a great resource for individuals to have access to. So contact your local association. Sometimes school boards will have this. If they don't have it, they actually should have something like this that they can share with you. And there's a great collection of videos that talk about self-esteem and those kinds of issues. So thanks for commenting on that. I'm going to have you unmute your mic.
Going to move to the next slide that we have here. And on the home scene, remember who's in the driver's seat. You're the parent. Don't be afraid to parent. that means in every sense of that term, you your child will kick against the fence to see that it's still there. And they need to know that you care about them doing well academically. If they think you don't care and it's that much hard work for them, for somebody who doesn't care or doesn't appreciate or won't give the support when they need, then to be sure they aren't going to put the extra effort into it, because it is work. The consistency and structure. Many times children with learning disabilities come from parents who have learning disabilities, and organization is not their long suit. But it is very important to kind of grow past ourselves and put the structure in place and be constant for them. It's important for the two parents involved, if there are two parents, and I'm not saying there are, but if there are, to be on the same page. You need to have your discussion about what the guidelines are going to be out of the earshot of the kids, and then stay to the course and don't get out manipulated. We all know how children can play one against the other depending on what it is that they're wanting. So you need to work together on that. When I'm seeing structure, things like always having the homework in the bag by the door before they go to bed at night instead of the mad scramble in the morning to get it together, having a spot where they do homework, having all of the things that they need to do homework with there all the time so that they aren't having the excuse that, well, I couldn't find the scissors when I had to do the assignment, or I didn't have time on the computer. You're going to need to plan time if you have a home computer and that's part of your regime for students to do homework with. You need to be able to allow their time on the computer or going to the library, providing those things that they need to be successful. And yes, you may have to turn off the TV. That is particularly distracting for students who are distractible to start with and having trouble focusing, and by that time of day are tired. So getting rid of the distractions, the TV, or somebody having a row in the next room or whatever when it's homework time. So you need to consciously set up that for success. Especially young children, being able to play games to teach concepts. And there's nothing like a good card game to teach math skills and to teach social skills and to teach staying to task and all kinds of concepts that we have. Monopoly, I'm going back to some old ones. Too often today, or many times today, we have children who play games, but they're playing strictly video games, which aren't teaching those concepts that we were taught as children when, a number of years ago. And it's amazing how many students that I work with are more than happy, if you will sit down and play a game with them, to do that rather than play their individual games that they're so familiar with. It's a really good way to teach many concepts. And there's books put out there showing what games can help you. Working together, cooking in the kitchen, where you're reading recipes and measuring. Those are excellent. It's not a game, but it's an activity you can do to teach math skills. Involving them in a sewing project, taking them shopping with you. So many times we're so eager or time short, we run off to do our shopping without the kids, and they never get to do any comparison shopping where they're using math skills and reading skills to read labels and read quantities and to compare prices and so on. Remembering to notice the good things. We need to have three compliments to balance off every insult. And at one time, Brenda went to, we had sent her to a summer camp where one of the key components that I took away from that was if somebody in a family, somebody in a group, dished up an insult, they had to come up with three compliments to counteract that. And it, first of all, was difficult for students who had never heard compliments to think of what a compliment would be. It was, secondly, a reminder that they were going to have to do that if if they were going to dish it up, they were going to have to dish up something else as well. posting all the good things on boards, on fridges, on notices, sending little cards, popping a note into a child's lunchbox, so that sticking something on their pillow, just so that they realize that you did notice, because we in our busy lives often get so involved and we forget to put down and to notice and to compliment on the good things, and we're really quick about doing the things that we are displeased with. We had a policy in our family that spilt milk is spilt milk, and there's nothing anybody could do about it, so we certainly weren't going to be correcting anybody or being upset about something like spilt milk, broken dishes. They just were not an issue. Nobody intended to, so we just got over it. Remember that some people do better when they're doing rote kind of work with the music on in particular. If they're studying for a test where they really need to focus, sometimes the music is not helpful. But most of the time when kids are coming home and they're working through math problems or doing those kinds of things in schools today, many teachers allow students, especially with learning disabilities, to put on a headset and tune out everything else. Have some background music going so that they can focus on their work. You have to play that one by ear, knowing your child, and perhaps selecting the kind of music. Canon in D is one of the best study pieces of music there is, and it helps to block out other music and help you to stay focused and awake. It's a good thing for getting your mind working first thing in the morning is with music as well. Once again, supervising and staying on top of things so that your child doesn't get bogged down and taking way longer doing their homework than they need to. Procrastination happens when students either don't know what to do, don't have enough information, are afraid of failure. It's a whole study why kids procrastinate on things and end up having to face deadlines at the very end. And once again, remember, you're going to be around for a long time, so maintain the relationship. Some of the accommodations that you need to be asking for at school, and this was one of the things we were talking about, is there are a number of things now in particular. One of them is technology that should be allowable in classrooms. It may be, there's so many things. It may be a tape recorder. It may be a laptop computer. It may be using a spell checker. And allowing that for an exam. It may be reducing the number of questions in a given assignment. If a student is just slow processing and they get the concept after 10 questions, we don't need to do make work projects that require 20 questions. And those kinds of things you may need to talk to the teacher about. They generally don't expect you to be spending the length of time that I know we would have to spend when Brenda was young doing homework. So I did at times go and talk to the teacher about reducing the number on an assignment. I also helped select which teacher she might have the next year when I knew there was personality or teaching styles that were going to work best with her. That's so in the spring I would check to see what was happening at the school and make sure that we were setting ourselves up for a good year if I had any options and choices of what to do. You might want to ask for a spelling exemption on an in-class test. If they're being tested on social studies or science, for instance, then don't mark them on spelling because spelling is an area of disability. On the other hand, if you're handing in an essay or report and you have the opportunity to have somebody to proofread and edit for you, then by all means spelling can be marked, but make sure that if that's the area of disability, then we're not marking against it. Time, it's quite within your rights to ask for extra time on tests and sometimes on hand-in assignments, depending on the child. There is an accommodation and there is a modification. Accommodation is making things work to accommodate the disability. And that's perfectly appropriate and should be requested. This is what advocacy is all about. Modifications typically are something that we should not be asking for if you're wanting to have the full academic marks and the same criteria that everyone else in the class is doing. So a modification is where they modify the program generally so that there is less expectation and you're not being marked in the same way. That's totally appropriate if you have a slow learner or if you're having a modified mark at the end. So be careful when you're asking for modifications or accommodations. You will find that there's usually support in your area at some point. So there, the Brenda's just flashed on here, there's lots of sources to go for extra information. And the Learning Disability Association is a nonprofit organization. I believe the International Dyslexia Association as well. They're nonprofit organizations that provide information and support to parents and to professionals. I'm going to turn this back to Brenda at this point, and I'm going to mute my mic, and thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Marion, for that. That's great that that information was shared. I just wanted to share with you some other resources, and one of the my goals in providing these sessions is to give you a source of where you can go for information, and this is one source to attend a presentation like this. But there's also some great resources, and we've got some here for Canada and the youth and the United States, and there's resources as well if you're joining us at another time from Australia or Europe as well. There's lots of different organizations, and the ones that we spoke of are organizations that have been around for a long time. There are some differences with those, and you need to see if they are going to match your needs. So many times Learning Disabilities Association provides conferences and presentations for you to become better informed with great keynote speakers. And I encourage you if they're in the area or if there's a conference, every time you go to a conference, you are going to come out with learning something new. And that's key as we move forward. And it's my desire is for individuals, when they have passed through the regular school system, that they still have a desire to learn and to move and advance forward. And many individuals figure out who they are once they've left high school and go on into post-secondary, and they have to really address what they need to do. And I've done many workshops in the school system with the students. So when you were talking about the grieving process, I want to let you know that that also happens with the students. So that's sometimes where they're angry and they want to deny that this is happening to them. And there needs to be that discussion, and people want to hide from that definition. And even though inside they know that they have struggled, and many times we believe a label can be disabling and we need it just to prove that we can have access to the supports. But without that diagnosis, we can't receive that. So a lot of students, when they go on to post-secondary, want to say, I can do it by myself. And they fail many times. And when they have had acceptance and have talked about the feelings that are associated with that, we are able to move forward in different ways. There's two other addresses that I've given you here. And one is ldonline.org, and they've got some great resources. They talk about assistive technology, they talk about the definition, they talk about where we can be assessed. And it's important. I'm going to do a presentation actually here soon on what is the value of having the assessment. And there's different laws that are coming down the pipeline and different initiatives that are coming down the pipeline where they do not want to identify learning disabilities and labeling that. And the disadvantages for that, if they go on and want to go on to post-secondary, they actually then will need to pay for that assessment, and that sometimes is $2,000 and takes a long time to receive. So it's important to have that diagnosis so that we understand what our potential and our opportunity is. And in a way, because I have been assessed a number of times through this process and have had discussions, I understand how I learn best. And we all have strengths and weaknesses, so we want to have the technologies and supports enhance our strength, but also compensate for our weaknesses. And we all are a variety of people, and we do things differently. And when schools require us to present that information in a format that is not showing our intellect ability, that is where the issues arise. And so we do not get the 90 because we were corrected on spelling versus our concepts and ideas. And sometimes we have a hard idea getting our ideas from our heads to our hand. And so having even a keyboard would make a huge difference. So that's giving us some information. I'm going to pass it back to Marion to finish up this slide, and then I want us to actually conclude here. I know that you guys have been very attentive for this amount of time, so we're just going to hit this slide really quickly, and then I'm going to finish up, and anyone that have questions and comments, we will open that up as well.
Thanks, Brenda. Brenda, communication leads to cooperation. We shouldn't work as an island. We need to be working, once again, as a team, and that means communicating. If we impute motives, that shuts down the team. My experience has been that imputing of motives, typically they're not very good motives, but imputing of motives where we're laying, they did this because, and we haven't even talked to them about it, really is an issue. Imputing motives even on our child as to why they did or didn't do what we thought instead of just getting to it. Thinking the best of everybody and working from that premise is going to be in our best interest. Keep track of the changes because there will be changes, and be aware of, even keep track of the changes like the week that it's test taking time, and or there's the week that there's an assignment coming in, an essay or a report. Note emotional changes, sleep pattern changes, stomach aches, excuse makings, and keep in mind saying I won't do it is a lot better in one's mind than recognizing that I can't do it. And so watch for attitude that's based on not wanting to lose face. You can always be corrected. They know that. Whereas they can't change their areas of issues that they're dealing with at the time. Inclusion at its best is possible with people with learning disabilities when we are when we're working within the system. The system typically is providing the supports. We need to find out where they are and how to access them. A good diagnosis is the place to start with that, and then communication and working together, advocacy, as we spoke of before. Brenda has some webinars coming up that she wants to share with you as well.
Great. So I just wanted to let you know that we do have future presentations. We work with an organization called Bookshare down in the States. And they provide a collection of material. And so we're going to be talking about post-secondary presentation. We're going to be talking about what is an educational therapist as well on November 18th. And these presentations are free, so it's a great way to learn something new, to expand our horizons as well. And in December, I'm going to have a presentation on the Classmate Reader and where we can find content. Where is it that we can go to increase information that we can be listening to and working with. So that's key as we move forward. And I love to learn, and I love that I have the opportunity and have been given that opportunity because of having that supportive environment. I wanted to let you know that we do have past presentations that are posted under our products tab, and they're called past presentations. There's a collection of materials. So I noticed today we have quite a few individuals here from Canada. We have a presentation. We talked about where people can receive content and what the Learning Disabilities Association is doing, and I'm going to be working with them as well, again, here in the near future on another presentation. So we wanted to thank you for attending today's presentation. Oh, I'm sorry about that. And you never know what you're doing sometimes on these presentations. If you wanted to contact Marion today and ask her some questions, she's been a great resource for many people around the country, and parents are always contacting her on what they did and how to work with the school system. So her email address is b.mcbride@sasktel.net. That's SASKTEL.net. And I am Brenda McBride, so you can reach me at brenda.mcbride@humanware.com. My phone number is 888-723-7273, and I'm at extension 320. So we are here to help and support you, and I'm always looking for new presentations. So if you want some information to learn some neat things that are being developed as well, then please go to humanware.com as well. And we have support tools and messages posted online. At this time, I wanted to open up and make sure that we have answered any questions and that you might have. And I'm going to open up the mic, so don't be afraid if you don't have a mic. I know for many people this is your first time, but we are going to have an open mic session here. And I just wanted to let you know, so if you have any kids that are screaming, that the mics are going to become available if you can't hear this. And if you have any questions, we would love to answer them if you want to ask them verbally. Otherwise, I want to thank you for attending today, and we look forward to seeing you back here on those other webinar times. And if you have a suggestion for a presentation, please send me an email or give me a shout, and we will connect and see what we can do to help you out. So with that, I'm going to open up the mics. I thank you for attending. We only do these presentations because we hope that we are servicing some individuals around the country. And I'm going to open that mic and look forward to hearing anything you have to say. Thank you. So you have been muted. Okay. I'm going to individually unlock each of you. Some of you might not have microphones, but some of you do. So I'm just opening it up right now for any questions that you have. Hi. I can barely hear you.
I did want to comment on something that was said about the older student.
Can you hold the mic right to your mic, please? To your mouth?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, that's about as good as I can get right now. If you can't hear me, I can just stop.
No, we're good. We're good.
You're good? Okay.
Yeah.
What I wanted to comment on was the fact that a lot of the older students...
What I'm going to do is mute everyone except for you, Kathleen, right now. And that will help so we can hear you. Okay, go ahead.
An older student who has not had a lot of experience in his elementary school years, but he goes to high school. And the hardest problem his mother is having right now is his resistance to it, because he feels it a single subject, and he realizes that in many cases the teachers do think that they're being unfair to other students when, for example, he takes the provincial examinations and has a lot of accommodations. She's having a lot of trouble, and when you brought it up in the presentation, I couldn't help but think my own child is on the phone right now, has not experienced it, but it certainly has been fixed with people I've met. I don't know at this point how I could help you. Have you got any ideas on helping someone who's at the end of their high school career and is really although he has had the psychoeducational assessment and has had some serious processing problems, he still feels that the teachers resist accommodating because they think that, well, that's not fair to the rest of the student population.
I'm going to actually address this, Kathleen. It's Brenda here. And one of the things that it is his right to have access to that information and support, and it is actually a confidential matter on when I went on to post-secondary. No one really needs to know why I was being excused from the room so that I could have the opportunity to write my exams in a quiet room and read out loud and stand up if I needed to. And I didn't have a reader with me. I just needed to read the questions out loud to get it. I needed to hear it to understand it. And it's really something that needs, the teachers need to be educated on that and to be taught some sensitivity training. And so that's why it was important for us to mention actually the video on the Fat City workshop and taking through someone through what it is like to have that that learning disability. One of the things to be aware of is that sometimes we say this, and our goal is to get through high school and to pass high school so that we can go on and receive the supports that we need in post-secondary, because sometimes there isn't that understanding in the higher grades especially. And we need to, there's a really good resource on understanding yourself, and you need to know that you have the right to that support. And if you can get, I think it's as much a crime for someone that is getting 50s and could be getting 65s as a person that is getting 85s and could be getting grades of 95. That's the same, you know, they aren't showing their potential. And there's a great resource out there by Howard Eaton on transitioning from high school into post-secondary as well, and to understand themselves, that importance. Do you have a comment at all, Marion?
I'm sorry that I didn't hear all of your question. It was just too faint for me, but I would suggest that it's one of those, if you need to bring in somebody who is an expert to come in and help you advocate, that's also possible. I have done that with other parents personally, gone to help advocate to say this is what's typical and expected and appropriate. I also took the initiative to go to the university when Brenda started university because at that time there weren't accommodations other than at the good graces of the professors, and I actually worked on a committee to put a policy in place at our university here in Regina. And it's one of those creating awareness thing. A few years ago, we didn't have students with learning disabilities who were making it to post-secondary, and that's because there weren't supports in the lower grades. So as we go along to secondary and post-secondary, it is appropriate to ask for, and once again, going back to educating yourself to the best of your ability, educating yourself. I'm sorry if I was faint there. Educating yourself to the best of your ability, to know what exactly to ask for, in particular, knowing what it is that would benefit the child, the student, in their studies. For some people, it's not longer test times. Sometimes it's needing a computer. So you need to know what you need.
I'm just going to reiterate the question, and it had to do with when a teacher is not willing to accommodate and not wanting to accommodate the student, what should the student be asking for? How do they work with the school system? Because they don't want to look different is one of the thoughts, and the students are not accepting in the classroom of that accommodation as well.
This particular issue then, and I apologize for having not heard your question to start with, this is a real sensitive issue because your student isn't necessarily online. They need to realize, at least in the school system here, many of the other students don't know know what accommodations are going on and, quite frankly, don't care. Students need to realize that once they leave high school, the rest of their life is not predicated on the friendships and relationships they have in school necessarily. They typically move on, move to different places, develop different relationships, and they have not been there and experienced that, and it may need that explanation. And understanding their own disability and their potential is really important as well. The other piece is going to the teachers and telling them about the sensitivity issue and asking for their cooperation so that it can be done very discreetly. There are ways to do that and accommodate where it looks like you're accommodating the entire class, and education that's good accommodation is typically good for the whole class. So, if you've got a hearing impairment, the microphone system that they put up and the speaker they put up for the entire class, don't separate out the one who needs it. Writing the notes on the board, don't separate. That isn't for one student. That's for that. Everybody benefits from that. If the student is the one who needs to have visual clues and not just an oral presentation, then everybody benefits, and it's not directed to one person. But if you don't talk to the teacher about that and bring them on side and alert them to the sensitivity part of it and ask for their cooperation in the specific ways that your child needs to be accommodated, then they need to be free, for instance, to speak to the teacher without everybody else listening and not feel put upon. I don't know. That's just some ideas. And if you'd like to talk to me personally or send me an email.
Thank you, everyone, and have yourself a great night.